Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. We want to return now to the subject of the Thanksgiving holiday, but we want to talk about how the holiday might be difficult for many families this year after the most bitter presidential election in recent memory. Regardless of your politics, many say they are feeling anxious about sitting down to the Thanksgiving table. Maybe you're imagining a dinner similar to this Saturday Night Live sketch last year.
You know, I am thankful that our governor is not going to let those refugees in here.
Oh, my God.
You know, I heard the refugees are all ISIS in disguise.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I actually saw an ISIS in the A&P today when I was picking up the yams.
No, you didn't, Aunt Kathy. That was an Asian woman.
She's a guest here.
Hello. So Adele might not be able to bring everyone together at your dinner table tomorrow, but we want to talk now about how to break bread after the rancor caused by the deep political divide. Joining us to talk about this are Northeastern University psychology professor Lisa Feldman Barrett. Her upcoming book is titled How Emotions Are Made, The Secret Life of the Brain. Welcome, Lisa.
Very, very nice to be here with you, Deb.
Also with us, Dan Shapiro. He's founder and director of the Harvard International Negotiation Program, and he's author of Negotiating the Non-Negotiable. Welcome, Dan.
Thanks. Great to be with you.
So we want to ask our listeners as well to join in this conversation. We want to hear from you. Has the presidential election divided your family? And what are you expecting tomorrow at Thanksgiving? How are you going to respond? If the conversation turns to politics, are you going to change your plans? And have you been told, don't talk, just listen this holiday? Because if you have, now we want to listen to you. You can call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. We should say that we don't typically do segments like this, but after this election, we did hear an awful lot and read an awful lot about the angst that many people are feeling about this holiday. We want to play another sketch here. This one is from the Ellen DeGeneres Show, imagining CNN's Wolf Blitzer being called to moderate the turkey dinner.
Of course he should build the wall. They're coming across by the millions.
It's nowhere near a million.
Hillary should be in prison.
She won the popular vote.
Nobody Trump else would get away with deleting what
he Mrs. Douglas, with Trump Uncle Lou, if we could just please get back to the original question. Could someone please pass the salt?
So a lot of jokes about this. Some people say all this talk about angst on the holidays just sour grapes. Some people say they're canceling. Some people say politics has no place at a holiday table. So why is there so much worry this year? This is what I want to ask our guests right now. Every 4 years, Thanksgiving comes after the presidential election. In 2000, we didn't even know who the next president was going to be. What do you think is different about this year? Lisa Feldman Barrett.
I think the main thing that's different this year is there's tremendous amounts of uncertainty about what people's core values and beliefs are. So I think people are feeling like they knew their family, they knew their neighbors. You might not agree necessarily, but you kind of knew what everybody's position was. And I think that this election result has left people really wondering whether they actually know the people that they spend time with. And that kind of uncertainty just makes people incredibly anxious.
Dan Shapiro, what do you think? What's different this year? Why is this so emotional?
Oh, I think you hit it on the nose with the SNL skit. The campaign was so toxic, so bitter, so personally offensive on all sides that I think that set a tone for our country in terms of the emotional climate and how we're supposed to talk politics. It's not civil. It's not friendly. It's not substantive. It's a personal attack. And I think that, along with the gravity of the issues at stake, joined to create this divisive atmosphere.
So I want to get some advice from both of you. And I also want to remind our listeners that if they are looking for a little advice, they can call in and ask you questions as well. We're asking about the presidential election. Is it divided your family? And what are you expecting during the Thanksgiving holiday tomorrow? Call us with your thoughts, with your questions at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Now, I would like to ask both of you, because what we've heard from folks is, what do I do about a family member who might be gloating that Trump won or being vehemently anti-Trump and mourning Clinton's loss? I mean, what do you do when there is clearly a big difference here politically after all of the heated debate that we've seen in this presidential debate? How do those two family members try to find common ground? Lisa, what do you say?
Well, I think that the first thing to consider is what people's goals are when they're having an interaction. So if somebody's goal is to gloat, then that's a different, you would take a different kind of strategy than if the goal was really to have a meaningful communication, a meaningful exchange of information. So I think the person who's faced with the gloater or who's, has to decide what are their goals going in, what do they really want to get out of it? Are they trying to convince someone? Are they trying to just get through with the meal with as little conflict as possible? I think identifying what you want to get out of it is the first step.
What if someone is using politics to play out a family dynamic, which I'm sure will be very common? Say someone was a Trump supporter, they're going to keep goading the Clinton supporter because this isn't really about politics. This is about sibling rivalry, right? And family members know exactly how to push other family members' buttons. Not that I'm speaking from personal experience. So what if someone knows that their family member is just going to keep pushing that politics button? Dan, what should they do?
Well, I think be aware of it. The big thing I would recommend, first of all, is before you even sit down at the table, decide whether you want to talk politics.
Agreed.
Yeah, okay.
Talk with the family, and I think carefully about that, because you might decide, let's just skip the politics and let's be a happy family tonight. However, can Uncle John or Aunt Sue, can they really skip the politics? Mm-hmm. And if not, then I think Lisa's advice is just dead on. You need to clarify, what is the purpose of the conversation? Is it to have a nice political debate? Is it to slander those people from the other side, or what? And then I think most important, like you're saying, is that toxic mix of politics and family dynamics. Why is that person gloating at the family table? Is it because their candidate won, or so on, or is it the fact that, boy, I've always felt like the stupidest person in this family, and finally tonight at the Thanksgiving dinner, it is my moment of redemption.
Right.
And that's probably not the best time for redemption, and I'm not sure it'll be swallowed very easily by those on the other side. But I think that awareness is important as well.
Okay. Well, I wanted to get some callers in the conversation here. So I would like to talk with Sean, who is calling from Framingham. Sean, you're on the air. Oh, sorry, Derek. Derek is calling from Brighton. Derek, you're on the air.
Yes, yeah. I think Hillary's basket of deplorables comment sort of embodies the rancor of the season. And just like when you're interacting with family who you're supposed to be so close with, you're also sort of looking at, people might be looking at Trump supporters and considering whether they're racist or not. And that goes, to me, just really personally, beyond just a normal political debate, and it can make things really tough.
So that comment meant what to you, Derek? What were you? Why did it affect you
well,
so deeply?
To me, I personally do consider that there's a portion of Trump supporters who are racist, and for me, it made me think, are these people who support Trump racist or not? I know not everyone is, but I personally do feel there's a certain aspect of his campaign that played on that.
So you don't think that you could bridge a divide with Trump supporters during the holiday?
It depends on the supporters. I mean, it's an individual thing, but then that just adds to the distrust.
So you think it's the language here? It's the level of maybe the lack of civility on both sides, really, that you think is going to affect our holiday dinners tomorrow. Is that right, Derek?
Yes. And I mean, I do think that Trump supporters, as I said, I don't consider many I don't consider racist, but I think they may say that all Hillary supporters are going around accusing everyone of being racist. And that's sort of an attack in its own, just going around and accusing people of racism.
All right, Derek, thanks so much. Dan, I wonder if you want to take that up a little bit. What do you think about it? I mean, many folks say that this was such a bitter presidential election, and Derek has a point here, in part because the language was really very harsh, if you will, for lack of a better word here, very harsh language from both sides. What does that do, and how might that affect our conversations, if we have them, about politics tomorrow?
I think Derek raises a great point. I think the core to the tension that our country has been experiencing, it's around identity. And identities have felt attacked on, you know, in many different ways, in terms of race, in terms of ethnicity, who's an immigrant, you know, what's the status of an immigrant, in terms of gender. And these things don't just hit people in one class of society or another. It's hitting everybody. And the moment we feel an assault on what we consider most sacred in our lives, our identity or aspects of our identity, we start to move toward very deep, fundamental us-them thinking. Where last year it might have been this wonderful family sitting down to the dinner, all of a sudden if I feel that somebody else in the family is attacking a core of who I am, it now becomes me versus you, us versus them, and you get this, you know, civil war at the Thanksgiving dinner table, and in many ways, understandably, because I'm out to protect my identity.
So what do we do? How do we avoid that, Dan?
I think one of the most useful things to do is to, before you even walk in, get it in your mind some perspective. You know, so imagine yourself on the moon looking down at the earth. Imagine that transcendent moment earlier in the year with your loved ones, your kids, whoever, something that helps you to see beyond that table. And when you find that emotions start to rise at the dinner table, bring that to mind. You know, I think people keep saying, oh, listen to the other side, listen, listen, listen. I think that's right, but listening is extremely hard to do when your identity is threatened. You need a tactic, a tool, and that's one simple tool you can do.
All right, I want to get some callers in here because our lines are full. Linda is calling from Stoneham. Linda, you're on the air.
Hi. Great to be on. My dilemma is a little bit different. My aunt, who is a highly educated and respected woman, is calling my father, who is a highly educated and respected man, stupid. And they're not going to be together at Thanksgiving because they have opposing opinions about the presidency.
So they've decided they cannot spend the holiday together.
Right, because the other is just so stupid, I guess, to believe what they believe.
Well, let's ask Lisa Feldman-Barrett. Lisa, why do you think that the emotions are so high around this that the holiday would be canceled?
Well, I think there are a couple of things to keep in mind. I think the first thing is that I don't really think that the tone of this election, it was maybe more intense than other public debates, but I think there's a degree of casual brutality that has just creeped into our public civic discussions. And this also creeps into the dinner table. So, you know, look at the average sitcom. It's bullying to a laugh track. This is what, and it's, so I think it's part of our culture these days to be somewhat harsh with each other. And part of that harshness is being not stupid, but ignorant of the other, of other people's positions. And I think that lack of knowledge is not necessarily stupidity. It can be ignorance. And what I mean by that is there's this old Buddhist saying, you know, that anger is a form of ignorance. What it means is when you're angry at someone, you are not taking the time to try to see things from their point of view. And as a consequence, it's so much easier to be angry at them when you cannot take their perspective or put yourself in their shoes. So I don't know whether
you know, there was a pre-existing conflict between these two highly intelligent people. But what does seem to me to be the case is that there's a cultivation of ignorance about the other person's point of view that really has to be resolved before there can be a comfortable discussion.
Okay, I want to tell listeners again, if you would like to ask either of our guests a question, Lisa Feldman Barrett, professor of psychology at Northeastern, Dan Shapiro, founder and director of the Harvard International Negotiation Program, they're with us. We're talking about what to do about navigating the holiday, the Thanksgiving holiday tomorrow after the divide in this presidential election. What are you expecting, listeners, during Thanksgiving dinner tomorrow, and what are you going to talk about or maybe not talk about this holiday in order to keep the peace? You can call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Steve is calling from Winthrop. Steve, you're on the air.
Hi, Deb. Thanks for taking my call. A really powerful technique for finding common ground is to be the first one who's willing to make a small compromise. So, like, if you want to, you know, ease tensions and you're a Trump supporter and you're talking to somebody who's a Clinton supporter, make sure to find something positive about what they're saying. And if it's the other way around, find something positive about what the Clinton supporter is saying or the Trump supporter is saying. Because one characteristic that has unified all the discourse throughout the election has been that there's been zero ability to say, you know, oh, well, you're a little bit right about this, you're a little bit right about that. It's been all no, all me, all you. And if you want to get along with people, one of the most powerful tools for doing that is engineering agreement by agreeing with them on something good that they already think. So people need to do that. You know, you don't need to just sit there and shout at each other. I can say, yes, you're right, we have an immigration problem. Or you can say, yes, you're right, we have a jobs problem. You can say, yes, you're right, we have a racism problem. And those are powerful tools for getting along.
All right, Steve, a good point. Find something positive. I want to go to another caller here. Matthew is calling from Wilmington. Matthew, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thank you for bringing up this topic. It's a great, great conversation. I actually thought about this myself yesterday. My father tends to lean a little bit more conservative, and I am liberal-leaning for sure. I went to school for political science, so it's really hard not to bring up the conversation, especially over a big table with people who are so politically charged after this election. So I'm just wondering if there's any tools you could recommend to maybe keep the conversation slim to none, or like your last caller said, maybe find more common ground where it's a little bit more civil. And I'll leave that to you.
Right. Well, let's ask both of our guests here. Matthew had a good point here. They want to talk. He wants to talk about the election with his father, even though he knows that his father has a different viewpoint. Should they find common ground first, or maybe something they can agree with, Lisa Feldman Barrett? Or how should you go about navigating that conversation that you know is not one of agreement, but you want to try to understand the other person's feelings and opinions here anyway?
Yeah, I think Matthew's asking a great question. I guess it just depends on how playful you want to be or how seriously, dreadfully seriously you want to take it. So one thing I might consider, we've done this definitely with students, but also in my own family where, like Matthew, I think, the parental units are slightly somewhat different from the younger generation's political points of view, you can switch sides. You can... So Matthew could take what he believes to be his father's side, and his father could take what he believes to be Matthew's point of view, and they can talk to each other, trying to represent each other's points of view. And this is a great opportunity for each other to feel understood, but also to have the opportunity to correct misconceptions. And it's a little bit more lighthearted, but also with the intent to connect.
And Dan, what would your advice be here in a situation like that? Want to talk about something that we know we don't agree on. How do we go about having a civil conversation?
Sure. Three quick points on that. Mm-hmm. One, rather than talking about the politics directly, ask, how has this election affected you? And you can get to the emotional side of the conversation rather than arguing why Trump or Clinton was right and the other was wrong. How has this election affected you? Second, appreciate. I've done a fair amount of work with hostage negotiators and crisis negotiators, this is one of the most powerful and complex tools. Rather than just sitting to the other side and listening to the other side's perspective and then defending your own, appreciate their perspective, meaning three things. And for the listener, I'd remember these. Simple but useful. One, try to understand where they are coming from. Two, try to see the merit, the value in that perspective. And three, let them know. You know, communicate that, yes, I understand. You put those three things together, you get a powerful form of appreciating. And the other feels appreciated. Thanksgiving feels a little bit more like Thanksgiving. Yeah. And my final point to the listener's question would be, I'd make a rule that once dessert comes, conversation done. So you don't end up in this vertigo-like craziness that, you know, turns into 6 hours and next Thanksgiving no one shows up.
Okay, so we've got a lot of good points here. We should probably make a tip sheet for listeners here. Decide if you're going to talk politics first, end it by dessert, and think of a couple of neutral questions. How has the election affected you? Appreciate what the other person has to say. Those are sort of good, broad ground rules. Would both of you agree?
Absolutely. I would just add one thing about appreciating. I think there's a really simple tip to communicate appreciation. That is, when someone discloses something to you, they say something to you about how you feel, you can make it clear that you've heard what they've said by reflecting back what they've said to them before you go on and talk about your own point of view. So don't jump in right away with your own point of view. Reflect back what they said so they understand that you've heard them and you're building on what they say. That can go a long way to feeling understood and valued.
Okay, I want to grab one more caller in our last minute here. Jill is calling from Milton. Jill, just quickly.
Yes, I think my biggest question and my biggest challenge is this idea of the fake news that is out there and trying to have a conversation with people when you have a certain set of facts and they have a certain set of facts and each of you think that the other person's facts are completely wrong. And I have no idea where to go with that kind of a conversation.
Okay, well, that's an interesting point. And Dan, let's ask you about that first. Can you just tell us, and again, this is the final minute of the show, what would you say when people disagree on the basic facts?
I'd start by listening. Really, once again, trying to understand what are they saying? And why do those facts matter to them? What's the bigger message that they're trying to get across with that message? Is it something about immigration policy, something else? It's not that I would ignore incorrect facts, but I look what's the bigger purpose beneath it. What are they trying to express? And
right.
Acknowledge that.
Okay, Dan Shapiro, founder and director of the Harvard International Negotiation Program and author of Negotiating the Non-Negotiable, Lisa Feldman Barrett, professor of psychology at Northeastern. Thanks to both of you for being with us.
Pleasure. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. That's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Deborah Becker. Have a lovely Thanksgiving. And join us again tomorrow for a special edition of Radio Boston.